Hello and welcome to Simply Save Podcast. The new breed of registered investment advisors have gone through several regulatory changes since the time SEBI created this category of financial intermediaries back in 2013. Some stock tippers working under the license of registered investment advisors and charging exorbitant fees to clients had got the regulator worried. Now investment advisors have to meet a certain minimum net worth requirement, certain qualification standards, maintain letter of engagement with clients, as well as there is now a capping on the fee structure to be charged to the clients. The regulations significantly and suddenly increase the compliance requirements for advisors, but is this heightened regulatory oversight good for the investors availing services from the advisors? In India, where investors have traditionally been shy of paying a fee for advice, do these slew of regulations offer comfort to investors? In this edition of Simply Save Podcast, I am joined by Suresh Sadagopan, founder of Letter 7 Financial Advisories, which manages close to 150 clients. Hi Suresh, welcome to Simply Save Podcast. You started your advisory practice 16 years back and have founded Letter 7 Financial Advisories. You were also part of SEBI's working group for the latest consultation paper on the advisory business. Given your vast experience, we thought we should connect with you to understand your take on how do you see advisory model shaping out for the Indian investors. So can we first quickly recap the regulatory changes that have happened with respect to advisory services in the recent past?
One of the changes which have happened compared to the past is one of the fundamental changes is that at one point in time before this regulation came into effect, it was at the business level. Okay, so somebody can do distribution, somebody can do advisory, and that at a business level there was supposedly a segregation. Now it is at the client level. At the business level, there were certain problems, and what they were able to see, the SEBI was able to see, they wanted to sort that by client level segregation. So now, in the case of this client level segregation, I think this is a brilliant thing which SEBI has come out with, whereby one client you either have to decide whether at a family level or a corporate group level, we need to decide whether they are an advisory client or a distribution client. So if they are a distribution client, for example, so that client we will deal only as a distributor and not give any kind of advice. And there is a client who is an advisory client, so we are not going to derive any kind of commission income. We will be only giving advice and we'll be suggesting commission-free products. So there is the clear-cut segregation between fee-only advice and distribution. And even if there are people within the family or within the corporate who are doing that, it should be clearly segregated at the client level. So at the family level, for example, suppose there is a husband and wife who are into advisory and distribution. So client A is an advisory client. Let us say the wife is handling, wife is an advisor, client A advice is wife is handling. So that client will be an advisory client. The husband will not be able to offer any products of a commissionable nature to that particular client. So at a family level, this client is an advisory client. So client B is a distribution client who chooses to deal with the husband.
Right.
Now, this particular client, his wife will not be able to offer any advice. So that is a fundamental segregation which has happened. Okay. There are some. So this is, in my opinion, this is a very, very good change,
right?
Which has happened. So there are some things which are not really. In my opinion, not really very positive changes.
Okay.
One of the things is a compulsory corporatization. So now today, an individual who has above 150 clients. Okay, they will have to necessarily become a corporate entity.
Right.
Now, the problem with this is that, see, a person who is doing a fee-only advice and he or she is charging, let us say, a fee to a client to create a financial plan. So,
right.
Suppose they are charging, let us say, 20,000. I'm just giving a random number.
Yeah.
So, now, if they are charging on an average 20,000 per client, they will be having a revenue of something like 30 lakhs.
Okay, right.
So having a revenue of 30 lakhs, then they will be touching that 150 client number and they will have to corporatize.
Right.
Right.
Now the problem is the corporatization net worth or the requirement to corporatize, and they'll have to have a amount of something like 50 lakhs which they have to put in the company. Okay,
right.
So which is not something a person who is actually doing 30-40 lakhs turnover. See, this is turnover, and after that their profit maybe 2/3 of that, 1/3 of that, half of that, whatever.
Right.
So on that, I mean, how do they suddenly get an amount like 50 lakhs? So it's a troubling thing.
Right.
Second thing is, see, it is presumptuous to assume that an individual will not be able to handle beyond 150 clients. Because
right.
even today, at this moment, I am an individual. I have so many advisors under me. Okay.
Right.
So along with my advisors, I can handle even 500 clients, 1,000 clients.
Right.
So you cannot say that a proprietary firm, an individual essentially, will not be able to handle more clients than 150. I mean, it is an assumption on SEBI's part that an individual will really be an individual and there will be nobody working under them. If
right.
I have the capacity to have as a proprietary firm to employ any number of people, then that limitation is not going to apply to me, right?
Right.
And ideally speaking, whether I want to corporatize or not, actually should be left to my discretion, and it should not have come as a regulatory fiat.
Right.
Truly speaking.
Right.
And if it had come as a regulatory fiat, there are two things which ideally should have been done. One is the net worth requirement should have been much, much lower. Okay.
Okay.
Like maybe 10 lakhs or 5 lakhs or something like that, which is something which people can manage.
Right.
50 lakhs is too high an amount. I mean, maybe for a very big corporate entity, even a 5 crore amount will not be a big challenge.
Right. Right.
But again, please look at the landscape. There are a lot of these individuals who are trying to scale up.
Right.
And for all these individuals who are trying to scale up, this is going to be a huge challenge for these kind of guys.
Right.
So this is a problem. This is clearly a problem area.
Right.
The second is suddenly now this is going to probably be okay with people like us who have been in this field for a fairly longish period of time.
Right. Right.
But I mean, I'm looking at it not from my point of view. I'm looking at it from the entire industry point of view.
Right.
Suppose there is a person who has come in, say, 2 years back, 3 years back, or who's aspiring to come in now.
Yeah.
And he has an aspiration to, increase the number of clients very fast.
True.
And probably he or she will do. So then how will they corporatize? I mean, at some point in time, they will hit a ceiling.
Right.
So it's going to be a problem. It's a challenge that we have to live with.
Right.
So one of the solutions to this, I think people have figured out, and I was also thinking about this,
right.
is that probably they will have to align with certain platforms. Now,
right.
there is no other option but to align with platforms, and they will operate under the aegis of a platform,
right.
which will do these net worth requirements and all that they will be meeting. They will be plugging in doing
sure.
that on the platform.
Sure.
So this is, you can say, something happening because the regulation has gone in a particular way.
Right.
If you ask me, should the regulation have gone in this way? No. My answer is no.
Okay.
And the second thing, as far as the net worth requirement is concerned, even assuming you want a 50 lakh net worth requirement, yes, you can allow somebody to corporatize, and then in a staggered manner, in a manner which they can actually do over a 5 year or a 7 year period, you should have allowed them to touch that 50 lakhs over a 5 or 7 year period.
Right.
Instead of asking them to bring that 50 lakhs at one go, it's
right.
not possible for a lot of people.
True.
So it could have been done better. Yes.
Okay.
It could have been done better. I am not really that very kicked by this particular
okay.
clause which has suddenly come in.
Sure.
The other thing is the professional qualification. Now somebody has to be either a postgraduate or a professional
right.
professionally qualified. Now suddenly this is, while I mean, on one hand, from the advisory point of view, it is a good thing. We are also putting a restriction as about how many people can actually come into this advisory business. So let us look at the broader picture. I mean, we have an addressable population of probably maybe 200 million or 250 million or something like that. Out of that, 1,300 million or 1,350 million. Okay.
Right.
So for that addressable population, we don't have enough advisors. Currently, I mean, the actual true advisors who will be there, maybe 600, 700.
Right.
Okay. So now the ratio is skewed against the addressable population. So
right.
we require more and more people to actually come into the fray and be advisors. The idea is good. as far as SEBI is concerned, they want to create a class of few only advisors.
Right.
But if you are going to put so many restrictions, the number of advisors who will come in will be rather limited. So from that point of view, increasing the professional qualification, plus they have also said minimum 5 years experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if I have to recruit a person under me today, they will have to have at least 2 years experience.
Right.
And now then apart from that, there's a certification requirement. So the education experience certification requirements have gone up.
Right.
So in my opinion, it is slightly too soon in the day that they have done that, because we have to build up. I would say a build up of at least 10,000 advisors is necessary before you start tightening these things.
Sure.
We are tightening this, I think, too soon. Okay. Now the third point. The third point is they want to they want us to have a certification. When I renew that certification, it should not be by continuing education points.
Right.
Now this is a bolt from the blue. See, I have been a CFP for the past 16 years now.
Right.
Okay. Now suddenly I come upon a situation. We have always been renewing through continuing education points. What is continuing education points? Continuing education points is that I have to continuously keep updating myself, upgrading myself in my professional area.
Yeah.
For that, I will be attending seminars. I'll be maybe giving some lectures. I'll be publishing articles and stuff like that.
Right.
And based on that, I earn continuing education points. And based on that, they will renew my certification. This is the international norm,
right,
not only for financial planning, for all the professional certifications across the globe. This is the international norm.
Sure.
Now suddenly this has been overturned, and people like us who are already CFPs are all forced to give the NISM 10A 10B.
Right. Right.
Okay. Now again, I have already given NISM 10A 10B, but it is a very unfortunate thing that people who are experienced in this field, I mean, we have all been professionally doing this thing for more than a decade.
Right.
And we are suddenly forced to write an exam.
Yeah.
It is like, I mean, I'm already, let us say, in college, and suddenly I'm asked to write, let us say, second standard exam. It is something like that.
Right.
Okay. So it is a completely unwanted requirement. Okay.
Right.
CFP certification or other certifications are all internationally recognized certification.
Right.
And if at all something was required, you can actually bring a bridge course. I mean, which is what we had suggested also.
Okay.
We can have a bridge course where you say these are all the developments, maybe a small capsule, maybe a small module, maybe 5 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours kind of thing. At the end of it, we can have an exam.
Sure.
What is the need for somebody to again go through the whole thing and give those two exams all over again? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right. This is again, in my opinion, a retrograde step,
okay,
which is actually going to impact the advisory practice. The last point is regarding the fee. It is unprecedented that any regulator is going to come up with how much you can charge,
right,
at least in the kind of professions that, I mean, the allied professions that we have, like a lawyer or a doctor or an architect and things like that.
Sure.
I mean, a cap like something like 1.25, while 1.25 like capping may sound like a big deal, okay,
right,
it may look like a large amount. I mean, why are we complaining kind of thing?
Sure.
But I mean, all of us are not dealing with the same kind of client type, right? And
sure,
even one person who is today dealing with a particular client type may also have a client where the amount of quantum of work involved can be very high.
Sure.
We have dealt with so many clients where we have charged more than 1.25 lakhs because the particular client situation demanded that. So much work was there.
Right.
So now that there is an artificial capping like 1.25 lakhs, then how do I go about doing that work?
Sure.
And the second thing is, there is also this other thing, which is a variable fee. Variable fee, they have kept a 2.5% of the assets under advice.
Yeah.
Which is okay. So, as far as the asset under advice is okay. But the problem is, every time as an advisor, I may not have an asset under advice at all.
Right.
Okay. So, like, suppose there is a person who comes with a whole lot of real estate. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't normally consider as asset under advice.
Okay.
Or if a person is coming with, let us say, loans.
Yeah.
And this person truly, really requires our help.
Yeah.
Okay. And we are going to do a lot of things for this person. And maybe the fee we may have to charge maybe more than 1.25. So how do I charge this person as asset under advice?
Right.
And now the other problem is you can charge only 6 months in advance. So and you can move from one model to another. Both models cannot coexist concurrently.
Sure.
So now the problem is for a lot of us, I mean, we have a lot of engagement which are discrete engagements. Somebody comes for something, I finish that, I complete that. Then there is some other engagement he may or he may not choose. And there may be other ongoing engagement for which I may charge a ongoing fee and things like that. So now these things which are logically happening are going to get hampered because the regulation doesn't want us to do that.
Right.
So these are the problems which we are actually grappling today.
Right.
And of course, there are a lot of these changes which they are suggesting at the letter of engagement side. So I don't have any gripe on that. I mean, that is all fine.
Sure.
So those are the positive changes, and these are, in my opinion, undesirable.
Sure. I also wanted to know from you, you know, why should investors be looking at availing investment advice now? As you'd know, in India, traditionally, investors have shied away from paying fee for advice. So any views on this from your end?
Yeah. So while all I have been talking about currently is on the changes at the regulatory end.
Yeah.
See, the situation from the client point of view has not changed to any extent at all.
Okay.
From the client point of view, I think there is a very, very strong case of they looking at a proper fee-only advisor.
Okay.
From their point of view, things have become better. So
okay.
From our point of view, it has degraded because there are so many things which are now put on our shoulders that I wonder for a lot of our advisors whether it will still be a viable profession at all, vocation at all.
Okay.
There are so many burdens which have been added on the shoulders of the advisor.
Sure.
Now look at it from the client consumer point of view. I think from the consumer point of view, if you were to look at it, a lot of these things are actually positive, not negative.
Right.
So if an advisor has to have higher educational qualification and certification and experience, from their point of view, it is good. From the overall development of the profession point of view, it is negative at this point.
Right.
From the client point of view, it is good. And look at it another way. Paying fee for advice is the right thing to do. I mean, this is something that we are always doing in all other professions. I mean, we go to a lawyer and we ask for their counsel and we pay a fee.
Right.
We go to a doctor. The doctor examines us, looks at the symptom, makes his diagnosis and pronounces what is the treatment ahead.
Sure.
So he gets paid for that. A surgeon does the same thing. He does his operation, he gets paid for it.
Right.
So in the case of a fee-only advisor, unfortunately, over a period of time, we have been having only distributors of various sorts who have also been delivering advice as a free kind of a service.
Right.
Now the problem with an advice which is embedded with a commissionable product.
Yeah.
Is that, see, there is a very clear conflict of interest written all over.
Right.
Okay. So they are an agent of a principal. They don't.
Right.
They don't look at the client. They need not necessarily look at the client interest.
Okay. Right.
They are representing a principal. They want to sell a product. They have a target.
Right.
So and they may also sell a product where they are getting the maximum commission from their point of view.
Right.
So it is possible that the distributor may not be working in your best interest. I am saying may not be.
Right.
So the particular distributor may choose to work in the client's best interest, but it is not verifiable.
Right.
In the case of an advisor who is now registered with SEBI, we are verifiably conflict-free.
Right.
The reason is we are registered as a fiduciary with a SEBI, and because of the model that we have chosen, we are verifiably conflict-free. We don't receive a remuneration from anybody else except for the client. And for that reason, they don't have to second guess whether what we are actually suggesting to them is ideal for them or not. We don't have any other reason to suggest any other product because there is no other pecuniary benefit that we are deriving from suggesting product X or product Y.
Right.
And we are having only one paymaster, which is the client.
Right.
And we do all the things which are in the best interest of that particular client.
Right.
So we are independent. We are completely conflict free. We are totally client centric. So from that point of view, they should choose a fee-only advisor.
Sure.
And very, very importantly, I want to point out one thing. See, ultimately, all of us are working for that money, right?
Right.
We are spending 30, 40 hours of our prime life going to a place of work, maybe as in service, maybe we are having our own business, but the raison d'etre is to earn an income.
Right.
And it is so ironical that after earning an income, we don't really pay much attention to it. And it is put here and there.
Sure.
Some relationship manager or some distributor comes and they say this product, that product, and you put the money here and there.
Right.
It's so ironical. It's much, much better for somebody to have a proper advisor behind you who can actually say what is really the thing that you need to do to achieve those goals. A lot of people are actually shooting in the dark. And
right.
we are those people. The advisors are those people who will tell them exactly what they need to do to achieve that goals.
Right.
So advisory proposition, in my opinion, yes, they have to pay a fee. They have to understand they have to pay a fee.
Right.
But it's a very, very attractive proposition from their point of view. It's a very important area from their point of view.
Right.
So one, that is something that they will have to learn to actually hand over to other people.
Okay.
Seek the counsel of other people.
Sure. Right. So this heightened regulatory oversight is actually positive for the investors paying fees for advice, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
So it is very painful for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it has tightened a whole lot more than what is desirable at this point in time. I'm not saying that it should not tighten at all.
Sure.
I'm all for raising the bar.
Sure.
But
sure.
I fear that the bar has been raised so much that only a few of us will survive.
Right.
That is what I'm fearing.
Sure.
We need probably, I would say, we need maybe 5 lakh advisors.
Okay.
But I mean, what we are having is maybe 500-600 advisors. So that is the disconnect.
Right. Sure. Also, can you give us some examples of how an investment advisor can add value? Anything that comes to your mind or something that you have seen happening, firsthand?
Yeah, there are, let me talk about 4 or 5 things.
Yeah.
So the first thing is what I just now told you. So I'm going to cover it in brief.
Yeah.
So when they go for a fee-only advisor, investment advisor, a registered investor,
right.
They know for a fact that this is a person who is going to work purely in their best interest only at the model level.
True.
They are registered as a fiduciary. They are client-centric. They are conflict-free, they are unbiased, and they have sufficient education, experience, certification, and they are knowledgeable. So in that sense, we can interact with them, get a plan done, and then act as per that plan.
Right.
Most probably, you will end up in a good place. You will have good outcomes.
Sure.
This is point number one.
Right.
Point number two, why people should choose an investment advisor is that, see, by definition, again, by the model level, we are fee only. So
right.
if we are fee only, we are not supposed to get any commission or any other income by whatever name called brokerage
right.
or whatever marketing charges. We are not supposed to get anything from anybody. Okay.
True.
When we put it that way, the conflict is not there. So now look at it from the client point of view. From the client point of view, instead of actually paying indirectly for a commissionable product, they are going to come to an advisor like us and they are going to source non-commissionable product.
Right.
Let me give an example of a mutual fund. It applies largely to other products as well.
Yeah.
In the case of a mutual fund, we have a regular plan which is commissionable and
right.
we have a direct plan which is non-commissionable.
Right.
So I'm going to talk again in broad numbers just to illustrate a point. So suppose somebody has, let us say, 100 rupees to invest.
Yeah.
And they are going for a commissionable product in an equity-oriented fund. It will be roughly about 2%, roughly.
Right. Right.
So that is the amount that will be deducted from their kitty by the mutual fund house to take care of all their expenses, including fund management charges, marketing expenses, and everything.
Right.
And include
right.
commission.
Okay. Right.
So 98 rupees of the client's money gets invested in that situation.
Right.
Whereas if they had chosen a direct plan, which
yeah.
is a non-commissionable product,
yeah.
roughly about 1% will get deducted, which is
yeah.
1 rupee, and 99 rupees will get invested in the mutual fund.
Right.
Now, the 1 rupee which they have saved, are they actually truly 100% saving that? The answer is no. They are going to pay a fee to us.
Right.
My fee may be 1 rupee, my fee may be 70 paisa, my fee may be 50 paisa.
Right.
Let us for a moment assume that they are paying totally that 1 rupee to me. So there are people who say that, what is the big deal? They are paying 2 rupees and the 2 rupees goes away, 98% 98 rupees is invested. And here, 1 rupee and 99 rupees is invested. Anyway, they are charging. You are charging 1 rupee.
Yeah.
But there is a world of a difference, because if I am a distributor or I am a bank and I have taken that 2 rupees, and suppose I give no service at all, the client has no recourse at all.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
In the case of an advisor, I am supposed to give a service for which I can be held responsible. They can stop paying me.
Right.
The control
right.
back to the client.
Right.
Okay. And at the model level, since you are going to remunerate me, you can expect a whole range of services, which from a commission agent, you don't expect also.
Sure.
And they don't give also.
Sure.
I mean, we do a financial plan, we do plan review, we do portfolio review, we do will making services, we do all these things at whatever charges we are charging,
right.
which is less than 1%.
Right.
So that you will not get when you are dealing with that kind of commissionable product.
Sure.
So this is number two. Number three, we are putting together a portfolio which is absolutely suitable, ideal, which fits like a glove from the client point of view
right.
in all senses.
Right.
Risk return perspective, taxation perspective, liquidity, tenure, all kinds of requirements we look at it, income needs. We look at all kinds of things and then we put together a portfolio that is absolutely suitable. So we
right.
come up with the asset allocation that is ideal from the client or the family point of view.
Right.
So that does not happen with a distributor kind of an approach, distribution kind of an approach, where they have a product to sell, they are interacting with the client, it's a transactional kind of an approach, where they ask, okay, what is that you want to do, or what is that you have, what money you have.
Right.
It's a transactional approach. The overall, that 360 degree approach does not happen, and the asset basket that the client gets to have, I mean, nobody is creating that asset. We are asset basket. We are creating.
Yeah.
We are creating. Okay.
Right.
Whereas
right.
in that case, that is not purpose creating.
Right.
So
right.
just logically, it just springs up over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
sure.
From that point of view, it's a forest of investments.
Sure.
Then because we are purpose creating those that asset.
Yeah.
That portfolio.
Yeah.
We also look at taxation aspect also. Okay.
Right.
From the
right.
client point of view, what will be the ideal product to go into from the taxation point of view?
Right.
We also look at money management point of view, appropriate, efficient money management point of view.
Right.
So if you look at all these things, what they are getting from a proper fee only good quality advisor is much better than what they can ever expect from anybody who's interacting on a transactional basis.
Sure.
Another two more things, Jash.
Yeah, sure.
One of the things is, we in the absence of a credible advisor, a lot of people tend to make a lot of mistakes.
Right.
They may get into unwanted real estate because they have not understood the whole aspect properly.
Yeah.
They have thought something, they have got into unwanted real estate, they have got into unwanted insurance plans.
Yeah.
See, the problem with these kind of investments is that once you make that investment, there is no easy way out of it.
Right.
So once you make the investment, it sets you back by several years. So there are lots of times when you tend to make mistakes and blunders in the absence of a proper credible advisor.
Sure.
So we are those people who can be the touch point at any point. We are the sounding board at every point.
Sure.
Before they actually take a decision, they can confer with us and we will give our counsel. After that, they can take whatever decision they want.
Right.
So this is very important. And the last point which I would say is that we are the true family insurance from their point of view in terms of continuity of the welfare of the family's interest, even if they are not there.
Right.
Okay. We are like that insurance.
Yeah.
Suppose the income earner is no more. A lot of times what happens is one person is actually controlling most of the time. They are controlling everything to do with finances. If that one person is not there at some point in time, the family gets into a huge amount of trouble. So a lot of money does flow in. Okay.
Correct.
But the problem is the person who is left out, maybe the spouse, she may not know too much about finances because she has not been handling finances.
Right.
So a lot of people land up, distributors land up, some relationship managers land up, so many people land up, or even the relatives and other well-wishers who are not aware about finances, they land up and they suggest so many things and the money can potentially get squandered. And we have seen this time and time again.
Right.
In the case of a proper advisor, with whom a client has been with for a long time,
yeah,
we tend to know everything there is to know about the client. Why have they invested whatever they have invested? What are their goals? When that is coming up? Everything.
Right.
So in this kind of a scenario, they just have to make one call to us. That's all.
Right. Right.
And the whole passing on the baton,
yeah,
to the family is absolutely silk and smooth.
Okay.
So right, this is, in fact, I would say the, I mean, I would say this one is the most important thing from anybody's point of view. They can be absolutely sure that
right,
their family's interest will be taken care of in toto,
right,
even if they are not there. In the case of insurance, they talk about insurance as that product. Insurance
right
is that product only purely from that particular product point of view, from the money point of
right
view.
Right.
Here,
right,
management of the money and taking care of all the goals and requirements of the family is
right
what we are taking care of, and that will happen without a problem. So
sure,
those are the broad four or five things.
Sure, sure. Also, Suresh, SEBI, you know, has been pushing for investment advice for quite some time, and probably that is the reason for such heightened regulatory oversight. But there have also been unforeseen challenges with, you know, stock tippers registering themselves as investment advisors. So is this problem now addressed, or, you know, how can this be addressed, and how should investors be careful with this particular segment?
Yeah. So as far as the stock tippers coming under the RIA regulation, actually it is muddying the waters for all of us.
Right.
Because when I say RIA, I mean, people are not sure whether I'm a stock tip provider or actually I'm a fee-only advisor.
Right. Right.
Ideally speaking, this should have been completely segregated out. I mean,
right,
stock tip providers, I don't know why they should be coming under the investment advisor regulation.
Right.
Because they are not really giving an advice the way we are giving an advice.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They are essentially saying buy this, sell that and all that. So
right,
that should actually ideally come under the stock broking regulation. They should actually come under the aegis of that regulation.
Right.
For various reasons, SEBI does not want to do that. And that is what is actually creating a huge problem today. Whatever problems we are now talking about,
right,
we are sharing that today. So now,
sure,
As far as the investors are concerned, so that is the ground reality. So we are all coming under the same regulation as of
sure
now.
Sure.
So now, as far as the investors are concerned, they really need to understand when somebody is saying, I'm an investment advisor,
yeah,
they need to question them, query them as to what is that you do.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Understand what is the model. Is it that you are going to just suggest me some stocks which I have to invest on my own, or you are going to invest on my behalf?
Right.
Is the return, is that is the only raison d'etre of our relationship itself, or it goes beyond that? It goes to what my goals are. Are you going to create a financial plan? Because ultimately that is what we require.
Sure.
Return and all that is evanescent. Okay.
Right.
So today you have a return, tomorrow you are in a loss.
True.
That is evanescent.
Right.
Whereas what is, what we have to plan for is to achieve those goals. The goals are permanent in the sense that, I mean, if you have a son or a daughter, their education, their future, you will have to plan for whether the market is down or up. And
right,
that is what fee-only advisors are planning for. We are not looking at whether the market is up and only then you will achieve the goal.
Sure.
That is a stupid way of looking at this. So we are looking at planning for. So investors have to spend enough time to understand who is doing what kind of work.
Right.
If they are
right
getting on to a stock tip provider, thinking
right
that they are going to provide investment advice, they are going to be in a bad place. So they will
sure
have to do the due diligence. Unfortunately,
right,
they have to do the due diligence much more than what would have been otherwise required
sure
had we
sure
been only in this investment advisor regulation.
Sure, sure, sure. And also, Suresh, how do you feel, an SRO for registered investment advisors can help, especially with these kind of situations?
No, I think SRO is a very good idea, in my
right
opinion. I'm not at all, I have nothing against to say about an SRO.
Right.
See, SEBI as a regulator has
right
too many rods in the fire. I mean, they are probably having, say, maybe 25, 30 things. Investment advisory is just one of the areas which they are overseeing.
Right.
So from that point of view, if the oversight has to be proper, then
right
I think it is logical to have an SRO who will actually provide that oversight. So now, who should be an SRO? That is
yeah
a question. That is a million-dollar question.
Right.
SEBI has indicated that the SRO will be a stock exchange.
Right.
In
right
my opinion, or anything that is formed by a stock exchange, I don't think
sure
it's a great idea at all.
Sure.
They may be familiar with the stock exchange. They may be familiar with an SRO emanating out of the stock exchange. They may have good arbitration mechanism. All those things are fine.
Right.
But I am not too sure whether how a stock exchange can provide proper SRO related functions for an investment
right.
advisor. We are significantly different from stock brokers who
right.
provide a different kind of service. So
right.
I don't know, while I'm bullish on, I'm completely for an SRO, because an SRO is a different organization who
right.
will be taking, overseeing all the advisors on a day-to-day level. Okay.
Right.
So that is absolutely desirable. But whether a stock exchange or anybody under them is going to be an ideal SRO remains to be seen. In my opinion, I am not too sure about anything
sure.
emanating out of the stock exchange being a proper SRO.
Sure, sure. But like you are saying, the idea of a self-regulating body is definitely a welcome thought, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Right.
Because SEBI, I mean, if today we are say 700 and including the stock to the providers, we are 1,300.
Yeah.
I mean, SEBI is going to be finding it very, very difficult to, individually take care of all the 1,300 people.
Sure.
So there needs to be an intermediate body, which
sure.
has the capacity to only focus on that one thing, which is
right.
SRO function for investment advisor. They'll be able to do that well. So
right.
that portion, I'm completely with SEBI. I mean,
sure.
yeah, SRO is an ideal thing. Whether the SRO should come out of a stock exchange, I really don't. I mean,
sure,
I'm not
sure.
Sure.
sure. Okay. Okay, Suresh, thank you so much for your time and sharing your valuable insights for our listeners and joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you, Suresh, once again for your insights, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope you found this conversation interesting and it helped you understand the role investment advisors can play in your financial journey. Keep listening to Simply Save. If you have any feedback or questions, do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com.